launched the brand new government food pyramid.
They want you to eat meat, but it has to come from the side of the road. That's
exactly
so important.
Yes.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join us as we boil down all the complicated nonsense in this week's news to much simpler nonsense. That's our news quiz from NPR.
Wait, wait, don't tell me. Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
This week on CatsCast, we talk with Chuck Henry, project lead for the largest state newspaper archive in the country.
Our earliest title at the moment is the New York Gazette from February of 1725.
Plus, a Catskill newspaper that's still going strong after some 44 years.
In this day and age, for a local newspaper to be in the black is a real blessing.
Saturday at 11 a.m. right here on Radio Catskill.
Here's a theory on why Trump won't let up on the Federal Reserve.
The Fed is the titular observable institution.
It's like going into the prison and beating up the big guy.
Exactly. Take the bologna sandwich, slam it on the floor, headbutt him and walk out.
Plus, Mr. Nobody against Putin, about a singular teacher who takes on Putin's propaganda war on this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. My guest today is George Nevis, co-owner of the Blue Fox Motel, along with his partner, Meg Sullivan, in Narrowsburg, New York. George was born and raised in a small town in the wine country of Portugal. It's a familiar story. His parents wanted more opportunity for him. So, in 1986, he arrived on our shores and has been hard at work ever since. There's a lot to unpack, so let's get to it. Welcome to Catskill Character, George. I am so happy to have you with me today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for considering me for your show. I'm really grateful for it.
Absolutely. Let's begin at your beginning. I would love it if you could talk about Portugal from your early years.
I grew up in wine country around the beach. When I say around the beach, it's, on the beach area, about an hour north of Lisbon. And it was a very different world back then. You know, I remember when my dad brought in a color TV. I watched black and white TV until I was 11 or 12 years old. And a color TV was so expensive. It was a very different world. We did things that kids nowadays, they don't do anymore, you know. I played with bottle caps. I raced bottle caps on the curbs of the sidewalks after school. That was a long time ago. I had a great, great upbringing. My dad and my mom, they were absolutely incredible. So much so that school system was disastrous in Portugal. The revolution is 74 and all that. There is a lot of adjustments, but adjustments in those days, it didn't take a year or two. It took 5 or 10 years. I have a younger brother, Nelson, and a younger sister, Sylvia, and we're all very close. And my parents were incredibly protective of all of us. So they overexpended themselves and they put us in boarding schools because they believed that was the best education for the kids. And then we had a cousin who had come to the U.S. quite a few years before. She suggested my parents, we could come up to the U.S. And that's what happened.
I was wondering, you lived in the wine country, but wasn't very far from the beach. What was the difference in the lifestyle living at your parents' house and living at your grandparents' house at the beach?
I spent a lot of time with my grandfather. He was a winemaker because I really wanted a motorcycle and there was no jobs in Portugal, none whatsoever. So the only jobs were the harvests for apples and pears and grapes. So I worked with my grandfather on the harvest since the age of 10. And that was difficult. But I did it because I really wanted the motorcycle. And my mom said to me, in this household with my money, you will never, ever have a motorcycle. So I said to her when I was about 10, it's okay, I'll get my own money. And it took me 5 years to save money to get my motorcycle. So I still have it, by the way.
Oh, you do? Is it in Portugal?
Yep.
Your father's father died when he was 10. And your father was a very inventive, creative photographer. He was really a self-made man. And you just explained your household to me before we started the interview. And every layer of the house was, your mother had her hair salon, your father had his photography studio, then he had a laboratory where he developed the photos. It was just such a creative hubbub at your house. You said it was chaotic and crazy, but in a good way. You told me when you were just a boy, you would go with your father to different jobs that he was shooting. You were exposed to a lot of excitement and a lot of creativity, weren't you, George?
Looking back, I did not know at the time how that would shape me, the person I am today. And actually, I did not realize that until, you know, a few decades later. Yes, my mom was super creative. My dad was super creative. Our household is a small, tiny little building that was built by my dad and my uncle. My dad and my uncle were best friends until they passed away. And they passed away within 6 months of each other. It was pretty insane. There was a store on the ground floor. My dad sold cameras and film and developing pictures for everybody. In those days, everybody would come and they would drop the stuff and dad will take care of it. And then we lived on the second floor and then my mom's hairdressing salon on the third floor. And then on the fourth floor was the laboratory where my dad did all the pictures. So the people worked in the store, the people work at the house, the people work at the salon, the people work at the laboratory. It was literally mayhem.
It sounds great. But you came to the U.S. when you were 17. You already spoke English and French and, of course, Portuguese. You went to a nice high school on the Upper West Side. However, the hours were in the evening between 4 and 8 o'clock, you told me.
Yep. Yes.
What was your high school experience like here in the U.S.?
I had more than enough credits to graduate from high school, but my English was not optimal. So a friend of my family got me a job in the garment center. So I used to go to work at 8 o'clock in the morning and I stopped at 3, and from 3 to 4, I went to the conference room and I did my homework. And then I used to take this, the number one to the Upper West Side. And then I went to school from 4 to 8. And that was my reality from September 86 to May 87. And then I graduated. And then once I graduated, that same friend who got me that job asked me if I wanted to do something else. And so I went to work for this very, very small couture designer. And I was there for 4 or 5 years. And that was kind of my college education.
Yeah. And I think you told me that while you were there, they sent you to FIT to learn pattern making.
They did. They said, hey, George, we had a great relationship. And they said, hey, why don't you go to FIT? We look at these programs and we'll pay for it just for you to get more knowledge about pattern making specifically.
Yeah.
So I went to FIT. It was the last day of registration. And I had a blank check. And in those days, it was very little money in comparison to today's cost of things. And I tried to get the pattern making classes. And they're full. One was full and the other one was full.
Oh.
Yeah, the one was full. But I had a blank check and there were so many girls there that I decided, you know, I have to come to this school because, you know, this will be so much fun. Literally. So, I went to FIT and I ended up doing, they did not know that. They never knew that. I told them I was doing pattern making, but I was actually doing fashion advertisement because that was the only class that was still available.
Oh, I see.
So I did fashion advertisement at FIT.
But again, there you see that that will play into your life in the future because you're learning about advertisement, whether it's fashion or not. So interesting. You also worked for a time as a flight attendant for United Airlines. We got to throw that in.
Yes. So I worked in this company and it was great. And then they got, one of my bosses got sick. He was not there anymore. And then they got a new production manager. And, you know, there's a couple of things I did not like that was going on. This is not, it was no longer the joyful work environment that I liked. So I said, I'm out of here. Mm. And I did not know at the time, they gave me such a check. They gave me such a check. I was like, wow.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it was very nice because, you know, I was incredibly loyal. I always am. And then I'm like, you know, I've been working, you know, 6-7 days a week for a long time. So I decided to spend the summer in Portugal.
And somewhere along the line, you became a flight attendant, but you didn't do that too long. Now, the thing that I found really crazy was at some point you began to open restaurants. Okay, that sounds fine. The only thing is that you didn't know the first thing about running a restaurant. You never worked in a restaurant. You didn't even know anybody that worked in a restaurant. And yet you opened these very successful, I might add, restaurants in New York City, which is not an easy thing to do.
Looking back, I knew then what I know now, I would have never done it. But, you know, when you are, you know, in your mid-20s, and, you know, you feel like you can do anything. And you know, even before that, I also shipped several containers of ATVs and jet skis to Portugal because the market was brand new. So during that period, one of my closest friends had a few dollars and we used to go to the Newark area with all my American friends, and they all said, how come there is no Portuguese in New York City? So, you know, one thing led to another. And then I find myself in 1995, and I opened a Portuguese restaurant in downtown Manhattan.
I just want to add, because the listener may not know, you said you went to downtown Newark. In downtown Newark, there's a section, it's called Down Neck. It's all Portuguese. I used to go down there and have fabulous Portuguese meals and go to clubs. They would have fado and you'd be dancing and they'd have singers. Yeah. I mean, it was an incredible experience. So you went down there and you soaked it all in and then you went and opened Portuguese restaurants in New York City. I love that.
Yeah, I did. That's exactly what I did.
Great.
I just did not know that the failure for restaurants in New York City, I did not know that. If I knew that, maybe I should have, I wouldn't have done it. So in those days, the 95% failed on the first year and 97% not make it after the third year. I did not know that.
But well, you anyway, know, do you ever hear that expression, ignorance is bliss?
Yes, I heard. This is exactly perfect example of it.
Okay, we're going to take a break here. And, you know, I just want to say, George, before we go, it seems to me that everything that you've done in your life has culminated in what you're creating now at the Blue Fox Motel, which we're going to talk about quite a bit in the second half of the show. But right now, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
You've been listening to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill with me, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest, George Nevis. We'll be right back.
It's a bird. It's a plane. Well, no, actually, it's just one organized and well-prepared human being to the rescue. I'm Meg Wolitzer, and the fiction on this week's Selected Shorts is about saving one another, or at least giving it your best shot.
Selected Shorts, Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill. NPR Music is looking for the next great undiscovered musician to play the Tiny Desk. If you're an unsigned artist, record a video of yourself playing one original song behind a desk and submit it to the 11th annual Tiny Desk Contest by February 9th. And if you win, you'll play your very own Tiny Desk concert. Think you've got what it takes? Learn more at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. I'm Donna Fellenberg, and if you've just tuned in, I've been speaking with George Nevis, the co-owner with his partner Meg Sullivan of the Blue Fox Motel in Narrowsburg, New York. In the first half of the show, we learned a bit about George's life, growing up in a small town in the wine country of Portugal. Through his family, George was exposed to a very strong work ethic, and as a boy, often assisted his father on many of his jobs as a photographer. George has worked all of his life and has owned and operated several restaurants in New York City. In the second half of the show, we're going to talk about the Blue Fox Motel, how he and his partner, Meg Sullivan, had a vision for the motel and what it could provide for the community. Here we go. George, you know, back in the day, I would drive down Route 97 and I would pass this dilapidated motel. And I think to myself, that is such a cool place. I wish somebody would buy it and reopen it. And then in 2016, you and Meg did exactly that.
Yes, we did. We have a place in Berryville, and usually we come from the city and we go as far as Berryville. One day, for some reason, we went north of Berryville and we passed by this place who had a sign that said for sale. And we stopped, we looked at it, and both of us were like, what a great space. What a beautiful space. It was in really bad shape because it was empty for 4 years. The previous owners lost it to the bank. So the bank had it for 4 years. So it was in really bad shape. Also, the place was probably a year or two away from not being able to be recuperated because it was in such disrepair. So, you know, we end up buying it from the bank. And then it took us about 3 years just to be able to open. The only reason that we were able to do it without, you know, going absolutely mad, it's because I have done 4 restaurants in New York City, which were buildings that were in disrepair. My first restaurant, Pau, my second restaurant, Giorgione, my third restaurant, Giorgione 508. These all were buildings that they were, you know, we had to dig the basements and it was complicated. So we bought it and we're renovating it. We're still working on it 9 years later. But, you know, I am Portuguese, so this nostalgia about keeping what was a long time ago, It's really important to me. So I took on this project, and it's been a good ride.
It's really a project of love.
Oh, for sure. You can say that. You know, it's one of the most rewarding things when people come up and pay attention to what we have done. Yes, certain things needed to be upgraded severely, but the extent of what we went through just to keep the integrity of what was done in the 1950s, you know, it's complicated, it's costly. Very, very costly. But the feedback, it's been incredible. I think we are one of a kind. Places like us haven't been done. It's rewarding when people really appreciate it and they pick up on the siding and the rooms and the doors and all that kind of stuff. On top of that, we upgraded certain things like the pool. Actually, the pool itself is the same pool made out of steel, but the whole surroundings and all that, not new, but change. And it's great when people come up and they appreciate it and all that.
That the pool looks like it could be a postcard from the 1960s, 1950s. Yep. You know, the thing that really blew my mind is when you told me your chef has been with you for 30 years. That is kind of unheard of. So he must have been working in the restaurants in New York.
Yeah. So when I signed the lease for my first restaurant in New York City in May 1995, I went to this place that there is a bunch of workers, and I met this guy, and then I said, hey, you know, here's some work. And so he renovated and he built my first restaurant on the corner of Spring and Greenwich. And after that, when we were ready to open, I said, hey, Honorio, I'm not going to be able to pay you what I pay for the construction, because in those days, the construction was paying way more than the kitchen. Mm. Things have changed since then. And I said, but I would like you to stay with me. And he said, okay, I'll stay with you. He never asked me how much I could pay him. That was 30 years. Well, we met 30 years in May. That was 30 years in December.
That is total trust.
Total trust. Total yes. trust. And in those days, there was a program that you could do the papers for the people who did not have papers. That program, unfortunately, very unfortunately, does not exist anymore. And in those days, there was also a lottery for people. That's also gone. A few people that worked for us got a lottery and said, okay, do the papers for me. I did the papers for him because, you know, there was no Portuguese chefs. And by then, he was better than any Portuguese chef ever. And, you know, we've been together and he's the reason and the success of all the restaurants. For me, it's emotional.
Apparently, you also do not have a big staff turnover there, which is a common problem up here. What's the secret?
Well, you know, if you treat people properly and if you help them, people are not going to go work for any place else. We have people working for us for a long, long time. Not only up here, we do have the capability of offering housing to some people. But that being said, when we have large events and pool parties and all that, there's people who've been working with me for the last 20, 25 years. So I can pick up the phone and I say, hey, could you help me on this large event? We do very large weddings. Very large for us is, you know, 150, 200 people. When we have those situations, I have the capability and I'm incredibly blessed for it of picking up the phone and says, hey, could you come and do this event for me? And there are people that they go like, sure, George, you know, give me the date, I'll go there and I'll help you out. Chefs, cooks, servers, bartenders. I am very, very humbled for those situations because that's what makes us.
You know, it seems to me that you're always evolving. I'd like you to tell the listener about the various accommodations at the Blue Fox. So you've got the motel and the cabins, but you've also got the Cliff House.
Yes, we have several options in here, just picking up on your angle. Sometimes we just give it away for people that actually need it during the winter, because in the summer it's more complicated because we need the revenue. But yes, we have the Blue House in the property. We have the Pool House across the street. We have the River House just across the river. We have the Cliff House. We have the Brook House. We have the Lake House. We have the House of 97. We have quite a few properties purely coincidental. The Pool House, we've been managing it for our friends, neighbors across the street. And then they just came to us and goes, why don't you just buy it? And you know, the Cliff House. And Alex goes, I have good news for you and bad news for you. Good news is I want to sell you the house. Bad news is you have to deal with my Russian mother.
With what?
My Russian mother.
Russian mother?
Alex is Russian. All these properties, they were never in the market. We just made deals with people and it just worked. I mean, the River House, which is one of our largest properties, Pedro came to us and said, I want you to buy. I'm like, Pedro, I don't have any money. And no bank will give me any money. And long story short, I spoke with Angela, and Angela runs all Pedro and all the daughters. And I said, why don't you just give me a mortgage? If you don't, you know, because no bank will give me any money. And if I don't pay it, you know what I do to my property. She got back to me next day. She said, sure, no problem. So they financed it for us.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So, you know, this is just has been a bunch of coincidences between the pool house and the river house and the chef's house and the cliff house. And not because we're looking for it. It's just.
Well, you know, that brings me to my next question, which is about flow. It sort of just flowed to you. It just flowed. And you talked about flow the first time that we met and we talked.
Yes.
Do you remember what you said about flow?
Well, the flow between staff, which is the main thing, dining room, and just making things happen naturally. Not because we're looking for it, not because we wanted to do it, just because it came to us and it was just a natural thing of doing it. You know, Bob and Victor across the street and Pedro Mini and Angela, you know, across the river and all that. It just happened.
Yeah. You know, it kind of reminds me of the person I interviewed last week talked about karma. If you got good karma, things are going to flow your way.
I believe in karma. I believe that, you know, if you treat people right, some good things will come to you. I don't do it with expectation, but
it's just a way of being.
It's just the way I do things.
Yeah, well, it's great. And I have to tell you, I hope our conversation has had good flow for you. I know it's been great for me. I've really enjoyed having you on my show. Thank you so much for joining me today, Georges.
You know, Donna, thank you so much for considering me. I'm just a small little guy that, you know, that works. And for you to considering me, you know, I'm really flattered. Thank you. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Really do.
Thank you.
All right, Donna.
This has been Catskill Character on WJFF Radio Catskill. My guest today has been the co-owner of the Blue Fox Motel in Narrowsburg, New York, Georges Nevis. The website for the Blue Fox Motel is bluefoxmotel.com. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30, except the last Saturday of the month when Greg Treeks takes over the 10:30 time slot. Join us then for more exciting tales from fascinating characters of the Catskills and beyond. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
Sullivan County's social host law, Jared's Law, makes it illegal for anyone 18 or older to provide alcohol or cannabis to minors. Named for a local teen killed in a drunk driving accident, Jared's Law ensures that adults are held accountable, with penalties including fines and even jail time. Parents and guardians are still the number one deterrent to underage substance use, and Jared's Law helps keep our kids safe. Paid for by Catholic Charities.
It's been snowing in Pennsylvania and New York, and it's been snowing in Britain and Ireland too. So, as the Buckload of Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, on Radio Catskill returns with a run of much more music editions of the show, I bring you songs about snow. I hope you'll join me on Sunday afternoon at 3.
So here's the deal. Public radio is now operating without federal funding, and your support matters more than ever. One way to help is to donate that car, truck, or old motorcycle in your driveway. You'll clear out some space and help keep trusted news coverage alive in your community. The process? Simple, free, even tax deductible. Just head to this station's website and help us keep this work going together.
Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.